Welcome to the Locate 852 podcast, bringing you insights on how you can build and scale your business with social platforms. Hosted by the leading Facebook ad strategist in Hong Kong, entrepreneur, branding expert, and the founder of Locate 852, Chris Chung.
Nico, thank you so much for being on the show. Super excited to have you on. Finally get to connect and chat after talking a whole bunch on Instagram.
Trying to book a podcast for three times.
And figuring out time differences. For the people that don't know you yet, that aren't in the watch space or look watch a lot about on YouTube, take us all the way back to baby Nico. What was your upbringing like? How were you as a child?
I was uncontrollable as a child in every way possible. I was kicked out about three primary schools. I was literally, my parents had a hell with me. I was a hell of a child. Like, it was brutal for my parents. But I was always a happy child, a bit hyperactive and stuff, but just hyper. Just not doing impulsive stuff, if you know what I mean, of being impulsive. Me as a child, it's not much different than the person I am today, funny enough.
And were you good at school? Were you good academically, or you didn't really care too much?
I didn't care, to be fair, but in primary school, in the Netherlands, you have special education for people like me that are weird. I finished 2 years earlier than the other classes. I was just bored, mate. I was just bored. I was blessed. I was gifted with some form of a set of brains. Let's put it that way. And yeah, I must say, like my like I said, I said earlier, I have a bit of a night. My parents had a bit of a nightmare with me, but I had the best memories when I was a kid, if you know what I mean. So I was always surrounded by loving people, and my parents, they're fucking great. You see what I mean? And really, really, really interesting to know. Like, I didn't expect that question, to be honest. So like, I was a happy child. I was just hyperactive, and then bouncing around like there's no tomorrow. You see what I mean?
And growing up, did you know, like, work-wise, what you wanted to pursue? Was it something that you were setting to do something professionally, work for other people, or was it just happy-go-lucky, I'll figure it out on the way out?
For me, it was always figuring it out, wing it. I felt quite early on that I didn't fit in this system, like in the system that we all think is the norm. I never felt like I fitted in. Like an education system, and then get a job, and then you need to do good at school. That's what your parents tell you. That's what the teachers tell you, because otherwise you don't have a future. It's a big lie, let me tell you that. That's a big lie. School is important, of course. But for me, school was important more for my social interactions rather than learning, if you know what I mean. It's not that as a kid you don't learn, but like, I didn't finish high school. I didn't finish any education after. And I think I've done pretty well, pretty all right, to be honest.
Yeah, not too shabby. So do you remember the first couple of jobs that you did?
Yes.
Let's hear McDonald's. Some funny stories.
McDonald's took me 3 weeks, then they fired me.
what did you do that made them fire you?
I was late. I wasn't interested. You see what I mean? When I'm not interested, I'm not interested. Like, I mean, it's going to be an absolute disaster. I have, from nearly every job except my last job, I got fired. It's kind of funny if you think about that. This is one of the first time I actually think about that. The first, from all my jobs I've ever had, only the last one I quit.
From McDonald's, what was the next job then?
McDonald's, a restaurant locally to me. And It was a chain of restaurants and a call center. Selling mobile phones. What else?
How old were you when you were doing these jumping between these jobs?
I was 16 in a job in McDonald's. I was 16, but keep in mind, like I was playing football and I was trying to get into the professional leagues. It was not like, it's not like that you have that as a target as a kid, or I didn't have that, but it was just something that was possible at the time. Because football was my life. It's everything I eat, sleep, breathe. Still to today, to be honest. But it was just like when you're 18, 19, you haven't finished any high school, you don't have that social interaction in university and stuff like that. You end up in a dead-end job. And that's what happened to me, to be honest. It's fine, right? There's nothing wrong with that. I'm fucking grateful I had these dead-end jobs because it made me realize what I want and what I do not want.
Now, realizing what you want and do not want, was it difficult during at that time just because you didn't finish high school, but obviously you had socializing, you had friends, seeing them, a good portion of them continue on. Did you still stay in touch with them? Did you see them get into jobs that you were potentially thinking about? Or what was that? How did that feel like?
This is maybe a bit of a weird approach, but because you have this is not being negative or being bad, like it is the reality, right? Because your job is a lower job, you're automatically associating yourself, and you have friends around you, and you make friends around you and acquaintances that have these same jobs, so colleagues. And there's nothing wrong with that. Fuck that. They were great people. You see what I mean? But that means that you're not surrounded by highly motivated, highly intelligent. Some of them are, maybe. You see what I mean? I'm not making any judgments here, but like you're just surrounded by the same people you work with, if you know what I mean. The thing is, if you surround yourself with people that are consistently smarter, better, more motivating than yourself, then you push yourself as well. You see what I mean? But for me, definitely in my 20s, and I think that's the interesting bit, I just realized I just wanted more in life, mate. I just wanted more in life. And what was I doing with my life? It's the future. You see what I mean? If this is growing up, if this is being grown up, I don't want it.
So what changed then when you started to realize in 20s you were doing these couple of jobs? What changed then when you realizing that you wanted more, you didn't want this, what you were having now? What did you then move into?
I've always had something like that in me, right? Because I'm very competitive. I always wanted to win in football or whatever. I was always wanted to be the best, right? But it's also important that people give you the opportunity, give you the chance. Mm. And when I was 19, I became the personal driver of that time, a global CEO of a global CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world. And that changed my life. That changed my social circle. That changed my perspective on things. And it made me realize that I actually can achieve. Mm-hmm. And Yepe, my good friend Yepe, my old boss, he passed away recently, very recent, the last couple of months. Now it's 6 months now. And that guy gave me an opportunity. See, and sometimes you need that one person in your life that sees something in you and says, you know what, come work for me. Although it is maybe a shitty job, you're being surrounded by people that know shit. You see what I mean?
So how long did you work at that? Was that the last job you did that you actually quit?
No, that wasn't the last job. No, I worked for him for 4 years. And in those 4 years, I've seen things I never thought I was able to see. I never thought you wouldn't be able to imagine the madness, basically.
What was it? What was the job you were? What was your title? What were you doing on a day to day basis?
I was his personal driver. Mm-hmm. So basically, I was his bitch, which was fine, right? Which is absolutely fine because it was so interesting in every way possible. And keep in mind, I'm still that same guy that I was in the past, right? So I would be late sometimes. I was a good driver, but I was terrible at being punctual. And that guy still gave me the chance, right? And then the more we got to know each other, he started to forgive me a bit more. But it was really, really funny because he lived a rock star life next to being a really respected CEO. And I saw both, if you know what I mean. So I was like, I really looked up to him. And that was just so cool. And I wanted that for myself, if you know what I mean.
So how soon after that, and then your next job, did you start to develop a passion for watches?
I've always had a passion of watches from a young age because for people like me, the people that are in the same boat like me, that would you would class that as ADHD, basically. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think ADHD is a superpower because we can achieve so much more than the average person because we can process so much more in our minds as the average person, I believe. So I see it as a superpower in every way possible. There's not a normal life. Give you an idea. I find it really hard to explain. But the fitness system, you need to have right. Everything needs to be right. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
For me, although I can read perfectly fine, I can't keep my concentration on one page for longer than a minute. You see what I mean? I can read perfectly, but my brain doesn't absorb it. It's really mad. It's crazy, if you know what I mean. This is when you read a book. So for me, to do things is a little bit more difficult. Which I'm used to, which I'm trained to do from when I was a kid. So I've been through hell and back several times when I was younger. So now I'm reaping the rewards of that because I've worked harder. I've needed to do more. I needed to go through mud. I needed to do whatever I needed to do to get where I am here. And that means that the resilience of people that grow up with, for example, ADHD, the resilience is significantly higher than someone else. And looking backwards, my passion for watches started because I was just interested in the intricacy of the movement of watches. It just obsessed me from when I was young. So you look at a case back and you see these gears moving when you wind and you see the balance wheel, just like the pendulum, the balance wheel, you see that move in is like, wow, what would that look when I take that apart? You see what I mean? That's just because we're creative people. You see what I mean? We just want to see it. We just want to figure it out. It's a bad idea then to to open up a watch and just take it apart. But that's the impulsiveness. That's the interest. That's the curiosity that then wins. And at a very young age, and I believe I was 13, 14, that just got me, if you know what I mean.
So what was your first watch? Do you remember? Everyone remembers.
Yeah, my first mechanical watch was when I was 16, but that was what my mom and dad gave me. But before that, I took my parents' watch apart. So I took I just took everything apart I could take apart, if you know what I mean. And that had some tough conversations at home. Let's put it that way.
So at what point did you, in your life, did you figure out that, you know, working for someone else wasn't for me, and understanding the challenges that you have been through to start your own business and to have your own company?
Because there's a recurring theme that you're constantly getting fired. you realize that's not life. You see what I mean? So I knew quite well if I want to stay, I knew quite early on if I want to stay alive, if I want to get a career, I need to work for myself. I've tried things in the past that it didn't work several times because I was forcing things that weren't natural, that weren't right. You see what I mean? That weren't passion. And to be completely honest, I think you can only excel in the things you really love.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really passionate about something, you can excel. You can become the best of it, best at it. And if you are the best at it, you can actually add value to your customers.
Mm.
And I think that's where the key lies for me. Where at a young age, I chased money. After Yepe, my good friend Yepe, passed away, fired me because he fired me as well. I just got a realization as I'm like, I want that life, but I need to get my shit in order. You see what I mean? And I'm not passionate about driving anyway. It was really cool and it was fancy cars and whatever, but that's just surface level stuff, if you know what I mean. I just want to do what I love. And that was taking watches apart or talking about my favorite subject. Because if I read a watch book, that's the only book that grabs my attention. It's where the interest lies.
So how did you then decide to move into there? What was the biggest struggles that you had to overcome in order to start, you know, get a business going? I'm sure the first couple of years wasn't as, you know, just smooth sailing.
Well, I think we need to go back a little. After I quit my job, after Yepe fired me, life is a mess and I just needed a new start. So I moved country. I moved to a completely different country. I said, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to restart. And this time we're going to restart with the knowledge that I have of what I don't want, where I'm not good at. That's it. I moved country, moved to Ireland, moved to Northern Ireland, moved to Belfast. And had a rough time there at first. The first 2 years were rough, were very rough. But I just kept in my mind, I just kept on fighting. And so I'm like, this is for the better. You see what I mean? This is for the best. This is for me. And I had some shitty jobs there as well. Call center jobs, which I was fired from. And then I worked. Then I got a job offered at Vodafone, the telecom company.
Yeah.
And my manager at the time, lovely guy, he was very, very patient with me. I was very good at what I was doing. I was bringing in numbers more than anyone else because I'm very competitive. Top whatever lead generator or whatever I was, because that when you put a competition on, I'm in. You see what I mean? And very patient with me, allowed me to work in my strength and not focus on my weaknesses. Where yes, I'll be late sometimes, but then you'll have to work later. It is what it is. You see what I mean? And that really changed my life. And that's the job after 4 years, 3.5 years, 4 years, I quit.
Mm-hmm.
First job I ever quit. It's mad. That's mad. Even fired from McDonald's, mate. How the fuck is that possible?
So looking back now, what would you say? Obviously, you've been through your struggles as well, big struggles. What were some of the biggest lessons that you had to learn the hard way that changes the way you do business now?
Passion above profits is the term I always use. Passion above profits. I've chased money my entire life and I never got it. I chased passion and money came. I just chased passion because passion is where you can add value. You actually do something for someone else by educating someone, by making people enthusiastic about something rather than it's just a transaction. Here's a watch. I don't know fuck all about it, but buy it.
Buy it.
So I have profit. It's more focused on me if you look at passion, I can educate you. I can tell you everything about this watch. And then we'll make a few quid in the end. It's passion above profits. I think that's the big, big change for me. Now comes the thing. There's a thin line of being a bad businessman and a good businessman, right?
Mm.
And let me tell you one thing. I'm a bad businessman, right? I'm a bad, bad commercial mastermind. But I don't, because for me, it's all about passion. But I hired the best businessman. I hired the best people around me. And my COO, who's going to become the CEO of my company very soon, he's a mastermind. He's very smart. He's very commercial driven. He's everything I'm not, mm-hmm. and I am everything he's not. And I think that is that's a good teamwork.
So so you quit. You actually quit the job at the call center. Then what did you do then?
I quit at 8 o'clock in the morning. Funny enough, that was the time that we do this podcast. I'm fucking knackered, by the way. wrong camera. I looked at the fucking laptop. That's how fucking bad it is. I've only had 4 hours sleep, so forgive me on that one. I knew it wasn't planned at all, right? So this is interesting for people. If people in Northern Ireland watch this, they know this, right? So I lived in a town called Banbridge, County Down. And I worked in Dublin, Carrick Mines, Junction 15 on the M50, right? This is only for the people that know in Ireland, right? The M50 is the hell on earth. That road is called, I call that the hell on earth, right? So I needed to travel every morning, an hour and 45 minutes by car to get to Dublin. And not just the beginning of Dublin, all around Dublin. So Dublin, the M50 goes on a half circle around Dublin. I was the last exit, right? Because it was the only job I was able to keep. These guys gave me the opportunity. So, and I didn't want to move away from where I lived, if you know what I mean. Because I had a fiance, I was actually engaged. And at that time, and I just didn't want to be away from her. And that road was one way, one hour and 45 minutes. And after 3.5 years, that shit gets to you, right? Being alone in that car every fucking day for at least 3.5 hours, if not more, right? That's tough. And I've always had this, I was writing stuff about watches just for myself, and was what, 2-3 things were published in books or magazines. Mate, I was the proudest guy ever. Unbelievable. And then just one morning, one random morning, right? In 2017, September, I drove to the office. I was the first one in the office. It was 7:30. I drove in the parking lot. And I parked the car, walked to the elevator, and you need to buzz in. You have a card, buzzed in, buzzer didn't work. And I was like, fuck this shit. Fuck this shit.
Wow.
I was done. I was just done. Just like done. I literally stepped out of the elevator, buzzer didn't fucking work. So I needed to open the elevator. Walked to floors. This was out of the blue, right? Out of the blue.
Wasn't planned.
Opened the office door where the card all of a sudden worked. I was like, looked around the office. I'm like, I was the first one. It was the second one or something, because someone else, I heard something in the, because it's quite a big office. And I walked towards the desk of my manager. There was a printer next to her desk. Wrote my resignation letter on that, left it on her desk, and left. I was in at like 7:30, left at 7:45. Immediately on my way back, stopped at the bank.
Yep.
And I just applied for a loan, because I saw somewhere online that you get a loan approved within 20 minutes. I was like, all right, we'll do that. And as I'm like, I'm not doing this shit. I'm not doing this any longer. If this is life, if this is growing up, if this is being a grown up, again, that same scenario when I was a kid, just shoot me now. I just want to end it.
What year was that?
2017. Yeah. I literally, mate, it was just that morning. Like, I wasn't happy at all because, like, it's not the money, but, like, I was making 30,000 euros a year. I was driving at least 3 hours a day. I had just had enough to my fiance at the time, she was a medical student. She was fucking smart, mate. And I looked like a fucking clown. I wasn't a clown. I was like, it's not, the job doesn't define the person, but it was just, this is not what I wanted in life. And all of a sudden it just dawned to me. Like, for years it was in my head. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it. I'm just going to do it.
So you applied for the loan.
Applied for a loan 20 minutes in, got it approved, 20,000 euros, because I was actually employed in the south of Ireland, so the Republic of Ireland, while living in the north of Ireland, which is the UK, and drove back home. And I told my missus for 3 months that I was working from home. Didn't tell her I've quit my job. That was weird. And that was me trying to sell some watches with the 20,000 euros. I bought 3 watches and I opened an Instagram account, and I still have the first video I've ever taken of that time. And I watch it quite regularly because it's a reminder of where I started. It's very awkward. That's the first video, how I started the company.
How did you pick the first 3 watches that you were going to sell?
I just went on eBay. Random. I knew my knowledge about watches was, like, after so many years of being obsessed with watches, my knowledge was there. Like, you see what I mean? But what the fuck did I know about trade? Nothing. I didn't know what to buy. I didn't know what to sell. Just bought a Tudor, bought a Breitling, and bought a Rolex. And that was it. Let me see if I can find that. I have the first video here. If I have enough courage, I may send you that one. But it's fucking insane.
Wow,
that was the first video ever done.
And so for those 3 months, you obviously bought 3 watches. And did you sell them all, and then you snowballed that, or what happened?
Yeah, I opened an Instagram account, sold the Breitling with 100 euros profit, made about 50 euros profit with the Tudor. Yeah, I lost about 400 euros on the Rolex, so it didn't make any sense to me. But I had the money back, and the Instagram account was slow. It was growing slow, and I was just trying to figure it out. And then you need to pay your installments back, and then you need to pay your rent back, and you don't have money in your fucking account. And, bro, that stuff was real, man. That was real. Like I'm very blessed that things went the way they went. And I know other people in the world have it way tougher than me and had it way tougher than me, and it's fine. But this was my tough. You see what I mean? This was fucking mentally draining because I wasn't honest either, because I lied to my fucking partner that like I quit my job.
So what kept you pushing? Obviously, there's bills needs to be paid, rent's due, you don't have a job, but you got a loan, didn't make a profit. What kept you going to do it again and not revert back to something with a little bit more safety?
That's the thing, right? This is the thing what people don't realize, right? They start a business while they're working. It doesn't fucking work. It will not work. And you're fucking, it's 1% why it would work. Right? Because you need to put yourself in a position where you have no other option than success, right? So you go into this survival mode, and a survival mode is what you will push you to levels that you have never expected to reach, right? It will literally push yourself to a level that you thought, what the fuck, I never thought it would be possible, right? It's that survival, it's that instinct. And it's not just in me, it's in every single person, because that's in our nature to survive, right? To provide, to get food on the table. That's in our nature. So if you're not in a situation, if you're in a situation where you're just like, you put yourself in, I'm like, I'm just, I don't know how, but I'm just going to wake up at this time and I'm going to not stop until I am here. And that's it. You put yourself in a position of no return, no safeties, nothing. Just push yourself to the absolute limit. You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised you'll be able to achieve. But for me, and this is like as if it had to be like this, it just had to be like that. I don't know how, but the moment I told my fiance at the time that the reason why I was actually home, it was not that I worked from home,
mm-hmm.
I actually quit my job. That's the moment where I cleared up my past, and it was zero, and everything was clean, and everything was just like done. She hated it. She didn't believe in it at all. And she was angry at me and that was all right for more than a week. She left the house. We lived together. So she left, she went to her parents. I think that changed my life. That moment really, that's where the business started to go. This is where I started to make my first money.
Mm. Yeah. What point from then on, from that moment, did you have your first break and your first taste of, something is working, something makes sense? You have your first taste of success.
That I sold more than one watch a week. Man, I started to make, instead of 100 euros margin, I made 500 euros. That was the first time I realized, like, you know what? Everyone hates what I'm doing. My parents hated that I quit my job. My fiance fucking barely spoke to me because, I mean, first of all, it was a right because I wasn't honest to her. I said that I quit my job, that I worked from home when I wasn't. Everyone was pissed off. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. This is what I have to do. For me, and it was the big change was when I made 500 euros margin, because that was 5 weeks of watches, if you know what I mean. And then I sold two watches a week, and then it just kept on growing from there. I got in touch with people that knew other people, and they recommended me, and so I'm like I always say this, right? If I started my business in any other country than Northern Ireland, in any other city than Belfast, I would have failed. Because the people in Belfast, the people in Northern Ireland, has helped me so much. Like, I'm just saying it the way it is, right? So I'm not going to sugarcoat this shit, right? I'm a foreigner in a country that isn't mine, selling watches out of the boot of my car. What the fuck? Would you buy a watch of me?
Hmm.
I'm a foreigner. I'm just saying this because it's me, right? I was a foreigner in a country that wasn't mine, selling Rolexes at the boot of my car. Would you buy a Rolex of me?
No.
Good. Because that is exactly the point I wanted to make. People trust me. People wanted to give me an opportunity. And this is where something I'll never forget, because 99 of the people, 99% of what I just described to you look dodgy, looks not good, looks, see what I mean? But this was just my life. This was me. This is the only way I could move up and get a shot in the future, or that was what I wanted. And the people in Northern Ireland, the people in Belfast, always at my back, always trusted me, believed me, and believed in Pride and Pinion, and believed in just they saw it differently. I saw a foreigner selling a Rolex out of a bit of a car. That's what I looked when I saw, when I looked in the mirror, that's what I saw. Well, the people that always supported me back then looked at me as that's just a guy trying to make a living, who's very passionate about watches. And yeah, he doesn't have the money to have a shop yet, but maybe that will happen in the future. So we'll see what he has to say. You see, that if I would do that in Miami. If we would do that in any other place in the world, I would have failed.
How long did it then, to take one step back, what were you then doing when you first had that 500 euros profit on a day-to-day basis? So people understand the full pictures. Were you looking up online during the day and then trying to figure out where to buy and then buying stock and then figuring out what to sell?
I was trying to speak with dealers to help me out. Most of them didn't. Most of them asked for their help. Most of them are now asking for help from me. It's funny. I just stay close to where I am, where in my industry. I was just trying to figure out what other people were doing so I could learn from that. And then there's one dealer that wants to help you. And so like, and it gives you a few tips to do. I'm like, fuck, that's unbelievable. Like, and then I started to ask people to give me a watch that I could sell for them instead of buying it. A consignment, the easy way, that what I call now, the easy way. And that I made a few quid there. And then my Instagram in the meantime, I started to grow. And in Belfast, there wasn't really a watch scene, to be honest. And still today, not really. Like, we're the biggest in the island of Ireland, right? And you have us, and then you need to wait for about four or five. Like, it's like we're double the size of the number two, basically. It's funny. And I'm very proud of that. We worked hard for that with the team. But like, the real change was when I made about 30,000 sterling profit in total. And I was able to open a shop. And I thought, that's the first thing I'm going to do now.
How long did that take from when you...
2 years.
3 years. So
two years.
So we're about 17, 2017, you did eight. So 2019.
2019. In December 2019 was the year that I opened. No, December 2018, I opened my shop. Mm-hmm. This was far in December 2018. So a year and a half.
No. So what made you?
Yeah, I'm correct, because the shop was open 3 years in December 2021. Yeah, 2018.
So what made you open the shop and not say, hey, we've got 30 grand right now, I should buy bigger, better watches to sell that way?
I think this is a bit of the luck of the draw, right? Where back in the day, I kind of always had bad luck. I thought it was bad luck, but it was more it was 99% me being me. Every normal person would have said, you need to buy more watches, flip it again, right? And do that yeah. And grow more money. But I looked at myself and I'm like, I don't want to be the guy that sells watches at a bit of a car. I want to be the guy that has this lovely shop. That's my life. I want a shop, right? Because then I can display my beautiful watches. The shop in total cost me 22,000 sterling to build. It's a small shop, mate, so it wasn't too expensive, right? And we actually need to go back how that started, because a client of mine owns the hotels. He became a client of mine, and I couldn't afford, of course, high street. So this guy gave me a room and said, you know what? Use that space. You don't have to pay any rent for a couple of months. Build your shop. Do it that way. Another person that helped me in Northern Ireland, right? I'll never forget that shit. Who else does that? Five-star hotel, right? Where the fuck can you find that? I barely knew the guy. I sold him a watch. You see what I mean? Who, like that? This is how important it is to help each other in business, right? If you see someone fighting for an opportunity or fighting for what he believes in, you need to help someone. You need to give someone a hand. This is so fucking important. You have no idea. And like, I opened my shop. It cost me 22 grand, and I had 8 grand to fill I had 8 grand left to fill the shop with watches. 8 grand. I had one watch. And a lovely shop, but I didn't have any watches.
So once that was done, $8,000, no watches. You could get one couple, maybe one or two. What changed then? Did you double down, just did the same thing, slowly, surely built that back up, or?
Yeah. I used it as a meeting spot and I hustled my way into it. And I asked people to, if they want to sell their watch, to put it in my shop. And then I displayed the box in the cabinet because that would give the place a bit more volume. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was the hustle of working literally 18 hours a day. 18 hours a day to get to that point.
So was that around the same time you started to decide to create content online, or was that still further down the lane?
The idea of doing a YouTube channel wasn't my idea. I didn't believe in it at all, to be completely honest. This was in a time when COVID became a thing, right? So this is about a year and a half later, right? So I hear this, right? You build up a business, you got there, blah, blah, blah. Now you have a lot of watches in the shop because you worked so hard for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then fucking COVID hit, bam, done. People are talking about a lockdown. Hospitality closes first. My shop is in a hotel, means hospitality. My shop is closing. I don't have any possibilities to sell any watches. And Jesus Christ, I had one other salesperson and an admin working for me. Mm. That is hell. So there you go. You built the business. You made a few quid. You have a shop. Extremely amazing. Fuck that. COVID hit. Doors are locked. You can't sell anything. How the fuck do you pay your bills? There was an idea on the table to do YouTube to promote the business, to get into a more worldwide audience, right? Or an audience bigger than Belfast locally, right? I hated the idea. I didn't believe in it. And I said no to it for 4 months. Whenever COVID hit, this was 4 months before COVID. Mm. Whenever COVID hit and we needed to close our doors, I said, fuck it, let's do it. And the one idea I didn't believe in was the idea that saved my company, my business, and brought the business where it is today. And keep in mind, we sell about 20 million worth of watches today, like in a year, 20 million sterling. It's crazy.
How do you, looking back now from when COVID hit, still very, very recent, when COVID hit and you started putting out content, to see the growth that you've had in both the personal branding wise and also business wise, what have you learned that you think you would want to share with other people that are trying to do, even if it's in a different industry or something in the same, that you think would be very good to take for them to apply?
The biggest thing I've learned is if you really truly believe in something, you need to put yourself in a position of no return. Safety nets do not apply. If you want to do it, you need to jump in a pool while you can't swim, mate. It means you need to stay afloat. You need to try to stay alive and you need to make sure that you don't drown. But that is the most valuable lesson of my life, that one. I surrounded myself with people that were smarter. Yeah? They're all good. Everyone knows how that fucking saying goes, etc. Always make sure that you're the dumbest in the room, not the smartest. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you're in the wrong room. I'm not going to go off on that, but it's all correct. It's all true. But the one thing that had the most impact is making sure that you do not have a way out, an easy way out. And say, you know what? Luckily, I still have that job. Because then I can rely on that. No. Luckily, you don't have that fucking job anymore. And you're not going to do anything else anymore. Because this is what you're going to do. And you're going to find a way to succeed in that. And you put yourself in the survival mode. That is the one thing that saved my life. That changed my life. And that's the biggest thing I've learned. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Because I'm still the same guy I was when I failed. This success on YouTube, etc., is the first time in my life that I've ever been proud of something, if you know what I mean. I finally, for the first time in my life, I have the feeling I have achieved something. It sounds really stupid, but I've never had that feeling. But now I feel that we can really impact the industry, and with the plans that we have, please do not be surprised if we will be the biggest in the UK in this side. And this story will be there. You see what I mean? That it will show that you can achieve something from absolutely nothing to something. Keep in mind, we're already selling about 20 million worth of watches a year. Sterling, yeah, and we supply, like, the people are relying on our business. People rely on something that I've created. It's a mad feeling, mate, when you come from nothing. That feeling when this is people's livelihoods. You see what I mean? The people that are currently with me, around me, the people that are currently at home working their bollocks off selling watches. It's their livelihoods. They have families. They have kids. They have mortgages. We're adding value to not just a community of people in Belfast, or we're providing for jobs, etc., but we're also adding massive value to the watch industry and watch community for selling watches from £1,000 upwards to millions, but not being fucking snobs and shit, being real, being passionate, loving what you do. You see what I mean?
What do you think the way that you've approached creating content and the way that you've done YouTube that you think has made it such a big success compared to everyone else that does, you know, a watch video, or this guy talks about his collection, that guy talks about their collection? What do you think you did different that fueled the success?
It's being authentic, it's being real, and calling things the way they are. I think that's where that's the big difference, right? I'm not a fucking snob, right? I'm a normal dude. I like to laugh. I say fuck, yes. But you see that other posh guy that wears that watch? He takes his shite as well, man. You see what I mean? That acts like Billy Big Balls and blah. He takes his shite as well, likes to laugh as well, and says fuck from time to time. You know, the queen swears sometimes, you know? She takes a shite. The only difference is you don't see that. Luckily you don't, by the way. Bad example, but anyway. I'm keeping it real, mate. I think that's the difference. And if you keep it real, people trust you. And when people trust you, you can do business. And when you can do business, you grow the company. It's simple. And being real, being true, being honest, right? Any other YouTuber in our space, you never hear a swear word. You never hear anything. You never hear, it's not about swearing that makes the difference, right? But I got to know the people in the watch industry before, the people that are on YouTube in the watch world, right? I watched these guys when I was nobody. I'm still nobody, but when I was not known in the YouTube space, I watched these guys. I know these guys now personally, and let me tell you one thing, they're all completely the opposite of what they are on YouTube, right? Completely the opposite. You want to hear something funny? I am exactly the same fucking cunt that I was on camera than I'm off camera, right? I'm a hardworking, passionate bloke that, yes, use bad language from time to time, and I call it an homage to something. You see what I mean? I come, we honor the females and whatever. joking. So they're looking at me. He's like, shut up now. Like that's what it. No, like I'm the same person on camera than I'm off camera. And that's who I am. And I think that's what the industry needs. In general, I think that's what the world needs, authenticity. Because if you look on YouTube or any TV show, it's all fucking fake, mate. Fuck that shit.
Where do you see Pride and Pinion, and where do you see your personal brand pushing over the next couple of years? What's the game plan? And you don't have to go into specifics if you can't share, but what's the goal?
The personal brand is not really very relevant anymore, right? Because a personal brand would be like, I don't give a shit about my personal brand. I really don't give a shit, right? Pride and Pinion, though, that's my life, right? And we have a clear goal to I'm not gonna say it's fucking bad. I said I wanted a clear goal to world domination. No, I'm joking. Yo. We have a very clear goal to be market leader in the UK, right? It's very clear, right? We've the plans on the table. The only thing we have to do is execute this, which we're going to do, right? And it will take us about 4 years, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And this is me being very in the current market. Like, it's easy to sell in a market that goes up, right? It's harder to sell in a market that goes down, right? Yeah. So we're not preparing for this market to go up. We're just preparing for the market to go down. So, and the reason for that is it will build the resilience of your company, right? 4 years from now, I want to be market leader in the UK and this side of Europe. That's my ambition. I've always outspoken that. And that's what we're going to do. Being ambitious is one thing. Being realistic is another thing. Am I being realistic? It is possible. With the reach that we have, we're the biggest social media platform in a watch world today, in the world today. With the reach that we currently have, with the passion that we have in our company, with the people that we have, the lean business, our business costs, and everything combined, we will do this. Yeah, that's my ambition.
Won't you say that? Yeah, you just commented that you didn't, the personal brand, you don't care too much, but wouldn't you, one could argue that the personal brand, the start of that, of you pushing that, is what fueled what Brand Opinion is doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's not about me anymore. It's about our company. It's about where we can add value. It's not about the Nico brand, the Nico ego. It's not about that shit, right?
I like Nico ego.
Yeah, like, but Chris, to be completely honest, I needed that boost of ego to fulfill certain feelings. You see what I mean? To feel important. I needed that in my life because I'd never achieved anything in my life. So that feeling of being somebody to someone, oh man, that's like people don't realize this, but the fake lifestyle on Instagram, what people do, like, that's why my Instagram is so fucking weird. It's like I show the real side, you see what I mean? Like, people do that because they're fucking insecure. They show they're fucking insecure, and it's ridiculously fine. It's 100% fine because there's nothing wrong with that, but I just would like them to see the other side as well, because I've been in that same situation. Fake it till you make it. I've been there, and it's a fucking dark place, mate. Right? That you have to do certain things to feel fulfilled, if you know what I mean. It's a dark fucking place.
Nico, before I ask you my last question, I know you've done a ton of different interviews, podcasts, and you're always, people come up to you and ask you a whole bunch of questions. What is one question that I should have asked you that I didn't?
What are you wearing currently?
What are you wearing currently? Share with us.
This is a Richard Mille RM11 Felipe Massa. This is a limited edition made for Texas, Americas. It's a nice looking watch.
And why is this something that, why this one?
Because everyone is looking at the RM35s. Everyone is overlooking this watch. Let me tell you one thing. This watch will double in the next 12 months. Because there's absolutely none out there in the world, etc. It's fine. It's good. People are focusing on the... This is what happens. People are focusing on watches that... How do you describe this, right? People are just looking at what superstars are wearing.
Yeah.
People forgot about this. See what I mean? Well, this is going to be the big boy watch now. Hopefully.
My last question for you, Nico, is if you were to be stripped away of all of your money, resources, and network today, and have to start all over again tomorrow, what are the first three things you would do and why?
Wow. Wow. I kind of have this feeling what you just described now. Without stripping off the money, I'm in Miami not knowing anyone, right? And I said to the team, I says, I want to build up a network here. Let's start. Where do we start? We're just going to do it. right? We're just going to fucking figure it out. And I got in touch with, believe it or not, within 24 hours with one of the best midfielders ever to carry a French passport.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name any names.
Yeah.
But I like, as if it just had to be, if you put yourself in that situation where you just, I don't know anyone in Miami, I want to build a network. I'm here not just to do YouTube and sell a few watches, but I'm here to build up a network. Keep in mind, I couldn't be further apart from this person. Now I'm going to meet him next week. Fuck him up. Like, how the fuck does that happen? But what would I do? What would be the first thing I would do? Buy, like, I don't have money to buy a phone, but I would buy a phone, of course. And I would open an Instagram account and I would follow every single person around that is doing something good for the world in the area. And just start to have conversations, because everything in the world, everything around you starts with that first conversation. For the biggest companies in the world starts with that first conversation. That first idea, that first conversation. Yo, how are you? You see what I mean? And people that have been through the struggles, have faced it, have built companies, know that when someone good reaches out that needs help, they will always help. It's like this weird thing. See what I mean? It's this unheard of. This is this non-spoken off rule. You just sometimes help someone. Now, please don't bomb me now with fucking DMs or stuff, but you know what I mean.
Nico, thank you so much for being on the show. For the people that want to follow you, keep up with what you're doing, buy a watch from you, sell a watch to you, where's the best place to find you?
Instagram, prideandpinion.com. You probably put the link somewhere in the description.
Yeah, we'll make sure.
Or Pride and Pinion on Instagram is, like, the funny bit is the Pride and Pinion Instagram is so ridiculously formal and luxury and stuff. And then you look at the actual the actual owner of the company, is like, what the fuck is wrong? How could it be such a big contrast? Yeah, my personal is Nico. Do you know what my Instagram is? Is it Nico Leonard or is Nico van der Horst?
We'll make sure that it's at the right one's added.
It's Nico van der Horst, most probably. That's my it's Nico Leonard van der Horst. Fair enough. That's how tech savvy I am. Nico Leonard van der Horst. That's my personal Instagram, and then the business at Pride and Pain. If you want to buy, sell, watch, or the team is there. I'm more than happy to help, even have a conversation or advice. That's it. Same Nico, for you.
Nico, thank you so much for being on the show.
Appreciate the invite. I'm sorry that it took at least two failed attempts. I'm very, very